Good afternoon, and welcome to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, June 10th, 2024. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded. And as usual, the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips with for people who are joining through phone calls. You can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. And if you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everybody who's on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you click on the raise hand icon, that will raise or lower your virtual hands. If you're able to use these tools, it will help us because that will indicate that somebody is intending to speak and we can have one speaker at a time. I would also request everyone to please stay on mute unless speaking because that helps us eliminate any external noise. So in advance, thank you for staying on mute and speaking. I just want to remind that we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, when speaking, please state your name before your comments because it helps them in doing their job well. It also helps people who are on phone calls knowing who the speakers are when they speak. And when people listen to the meeting audio, it helps them in knowing who were the speakers at the time. We also request speakers to please describe yourselves in briefly when initially speaking. For instance, I'm a female, Asian Indian. I wear reading glasses and I have long dark hair. Chair Calabia, I can go ahead and read the meeting agenda and then I can go ahead and take the roll call of the committee members.
Please do.
Great, thank you. So what I will do is before I start reading the agenda, I would share my screen and put the agenda on my screen. So if somebody can confirm that my screen is visible, I would appreciate that.
I can see it.
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you. So just like I said, after I finish reading the agenda, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, Chair Calabia will go through the review and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. Afterwards, we have the team to discuss and provide us with an update about Better Bus Network Redesign Year One Network. I believe Al Himes will be presenting that, and he might be joined by Melissa Kim. Today, some of the AAC members participated in a site visit about wayfinding signs at Lafond Plaza. So the committee will discuss that after the site visit. At 5:45, we will have any public comments, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. At this point, I will stop sharing my screen. Going to the roll call of the committee members. When I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Azar Atura. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy.
Alert. Audio now unmuted. Alert. Danny Sa'al has joined the meeting.
Okay, thank you, Vanessa. Tawan Farmer.
Tatuan Farmer has joined the meeting. Space.
Okay, so we know that Tawan has joined the meeting. Debbie Fisher. Marcy Goldstein. Thank you. I'm sorry, Marcy.
Debbie is at a meeting out of town.
Yes, thank you. I believe
I knew.
Yes, Tawan, you have joined.
Farm. Yep.
Thank you. Thank you, Marcy, for that reminder. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum. Thomas had informed that he will not be able to join today. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsell.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Doris Ray. Denise Rush. Paul Samelford. Patrick Sheehan. Kelly Simono. And Philip.
Present. I couldn't get unmuted.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Rush. And Philip Weintraub. Okay. That concludes the roster for today's bus and rail subcommittee meeting. I will be looking out for any members who join later, and I'll mark their presence accordingly. I also want to say that any members of the public who would like to make some public comments during that section, if you're able to send me a chat message, please do. Otherwise, if you're able to raise your hands when we begin that section, please do, so that we know how many people are intending to speak and we can have the speakers in the order received. Chair Calabio, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes, if you could mention what the agenda is, and we'll
sure
have approval.
So we have a Better Bus Network Redesign Year One Network. Afterwards, we have the committee discussion about wayfinding signs update post site visit from today.
Okay.
And the public comment section.
Yes. Do I hear a motion to approve the agenda?
This is Sandy. I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second, anyone?
I'll second, Tina.
Thank you, Steve. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Hearing no objections, the agenda is approved. And let's see. We may as well start with the Better Bus Network Redesign. Is Melissa there or anyone else?
Chair Collette, this is Al Himes is going to be presenting, and he has joined.
Okay. Yeah, I see Al there. Okay. It's all yours, Al.
Okay, thanks. Yep, so I'm Al Himes. I'm the director of Metro Bus Service Planning and Scheduling. I'm a white male with a very small amount of brown hair that mostly is gone, and I'm wearing glasses. And I will go ahead and share the presentation. Oh, okay. Anu, do you want to share the presentation, or do you want me to just talk through it, or?
Sure. If you would give me a quick moment, Al, and I'll share it. Give me 1 second.
Okay.
Thank you.
Al, while we're waiting, the Coalition for Smart Growth is having a program tomorrow. And since many members are not yet present or will be missing, I'll urge them to consider tuning in to CSG's program on Better Bus.
Yep.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, the materials will look very similar to what you'll see at the CSG, to what we're presenting here today. So yeah. So Anu, if you want to go to the second slide.
Okay, seems like, sorry about that. Give me 1 second. I see what the issue is. Okay.
Okay, yeah. So you know, why are we looking to do the bus network now? Buses are a major part of our region's transportation network. and our region is growing. People's travel patterns are changing, especially, there were a lot of changes in the travel patterns coming out of the pandemic, and we're just, starting to get a sense of what that looks like going forward. We want to prioritize, better prioritize the customer experience more than we, continue to build upon that. And we also want to make sure that we're using our resources as efficiently as possible. And then on to the next slide. Where are we at in the process? So, we started this particular project back in the fall of 2022. We went out and we asked customers and others in the region about what their priorities were for transit, what the opportunities were, what the gaps in transit service was. We received over 6,500 survey responses to that over 5 weeks of public outreach. That part of it didn't involve, that was not about maps or anything. It was just strictly like, what are people looking at? So we could take that information back. And then we used the information gathered to develop a draft visionary bus network. So, we came back out to the public in the spring of 2023, so basically a year ago at this time. And we shared the draft visionary network, which was the network that we felt that the region needed to fulfill the region's needs that were reasonably fulfilled by transit. So that network was about, at least 30% over the current level of service that we operate. So there was a lot of additional service in that. We did 9 weeks of public outreach on that, talked to over 20,000 people, and received over 8,000 comments on that network. With those comments, we came back and we made revisions to that visionary network. And then plus we also took a look at it and said, okay, so which items from that visionary network would we prioritize if we could only operate the same level of resources that we have in our current service plan? So that is what we have in the proposed 2025 Better Bus Network is a network that is the same level as our current amount of resources. We started the public outreach in that in mid-May. We have 9 weeks of public outreach planned on that to gather comments on that 2025 proposed bus network. After we gather those comments, we'll be coming back and making further revisions based on the comments that we received to the public, and then we'll return to our board of directors for approval of that network with the revisions in the fall of 2024, and then that leading us to get ready to implement that network in the summer of 2025, so basically a year from now. And then building upon that, then as we move forward in the future and more resources become available, we'll continue to work on implementing that full visionary network by adding more and more items to that the 2025 proposed bus network as the resources become available. So moving to the next slide. What do we think? We feel that this proposed Better Bus Network will attract more customers using the same level of resources. And I knew that's on the next slide here as well.
I'm sorry, did the slide move out?
No, it's still,
Okay.
at least on my
Okay.
screen, it's still stalled. Okay.
Yes, it
So
gets stuck at times.
what we think, what we believe that this new proposed Better Bus Network will provide is more frequent all-day service all throughout the week, including middays, evenings, Saturdays, and Sundays, building upon the all-day service network that we started a couple of years ago and continuing to add more routes to that, making more connections with job centers, transit stations, hospitals, and other places where people want to travel, making service more convenient and having more direct service, saving customers time and improving our operations, more reliable service using bus lanes, so getting more and more of our service to take advantage of the bus lanes that the various jurisdictions throughout the region are putting in, and also rolling out new route names to make our bus network more understandable. So we think that this new network could attract up to 13,000 more daily trips per weekday over our existing service. Moving on to the next slide. So with additional investment, we feel that the Visionary Network can improve access to frequency, improve access, frequency, and convenience, and attract many more customers. The Visionary Network would provide at least 30-minute frequency throughout the day on most routes, provide 30 additional routes above and beyond what we're proposing in the 2025 bus network, including more connections to Metrorail branches and emerging activity centers, creating a region-wide 24-hour bus network, including overnight connections to the region's airports, and creating an even more consistent frequent service all day and all days of the week. So then some highlights from the bus network. So first of all, so new we're on the there's a graphic after the highlights of the proposed 20, so I think we're a couple more slides further down the presentation now. So this proposed 2025 bus network, as I said, includes the same level of resources that we're operating with our current service. It does include an updated service design with new changes to routes, service times, and building upon the outreach that we did in phase two. It also has recommendations for bus stop consolidations, trying to make service faster and more direct on our high frequency corridors. I would mention that on bus stop consolidation that we've limited that to the main corridors, routes that are intended to provide more coverage service in the neighborhoods do not have stops proposed for consolidation. That's the main arterial routes where the consolidations are proposed. This new network also identifies the operator assignments, so it's the specific bus operator in the region that's proposed to operate that service, whether it be Metro Bus or one of the local operators such as Ride-On or Dash or the other various operators in the region. And it also includes the recommendations for the new route names. So moving on to the next slide, getting to this network, it did, to get down to the proposed 2025 bus network from what the visionary plan was, it did include some difficult trade-offs. Because we were looking for consistent levels of service throughout the day and the week, it did result in some areas having less frequent service during the rush hour periods. Because we were looking at providing better service in equity-focused communities, it required reducing service in some areas with low ridership. And because we're making service faster and more direct, some customers may have to travel a little further to get to a bus stop. So on to the next slide. So just an example of, so the network and showing how it better connects the region. First of all, it's an increase of 12,000 more jobs that have access within 60 minutes on transit in the AM rush hour period. 4 to 6% more bus trips, connecting destinations between the District of Maryland and Virginia on weekdays, and more residents, especially people of color and residents of low income, will have easier access to hospitals, colleges, and grocery stores at all times of the day. And, you know, the map example here shows how we have improved connections to National Harbor. So it exists, you know, in the, you know, right now we have the NH1 and the NH2 routes. In the new network, you know, we continue to have a high frequency route that comes from Southern Avenue, but then also connects to Suitland and comes through the Glass Manor area connecting to National Harbor. But then we also have a new route that connects Suitland, National Harbor, and then King Street on the Virginia side of the river. And then additionally, we have a new connection that comes from Levant Plaza to National Harbor, coming down the Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue and South Capitol Street corridor to connect to National Harbor. So moving on to the next slide, you know, we also are improving access to better bus service, especially on evenings and weekends. 22,000 on Saturday and 46,000 on Sunday more would have access to bus service. 47,000 more residents of equity-focused communities in Maryland gain frequency access to high-frequency bus service during the morning rush hour period. 146,000 residents gain access to high-frequency service during the evening hours, 7 days a week, and 47% increase in the number of routes in our 20-minute frequent service network. So it's 28 routes in comparison to the 19 routes that we have currently. And the map example just tries to give a picture of the example of increased in high-frequency bus routes serving the area in Prince George's County, centered around the Central Avenue and Addison Road station area, to sort of give a flavor of how that improves what the map looks like in terms of high frequency bus service and connections. Moving on to the next slide, we're also advancing access to opportunity for equity focused communities. You know, 14,000 more residents of equity-focused communities gained access to high-frequency bus service during the AM peak period. In Maryland, 31% more equity-focused community residents will have access to high-frequency bus service during the AM peak period. Across the region, residents of equity-focused communities will have access to almost 9% more jobs during the AM peak. 5% more trips made by residents of equity-focused communities will have a convenient transit option, higher, and that's a higher increase than it is for the region as a whole with this new bus network. And 35,000 additional people of color will have access to colleges during the weekday peak period. And, you know, the map on this slide shows some additional connections from Virginia into the District of Columbia, one from the west end of Alexandria, one from the extending a route from Arlington out to the Culmore area into the District of Columbia, and the third extending service out to Seven Corners directly into the District of Columbia. So moving on to the next slide, this network also prepares us for the future. We're creating building blocks to get from this year one network to the visionary bus network. You know, so we've designed this network so it's we can build upon it to get there. And it will support recent and planned growth in housing and jobs, provide more service on streets with dedicated bus lanes. You know, supports a network that will complement existing and future high capacity transit plans. And it's scalable to achieve that visionary network as resources become available. And there's a couple examples of extensions and leveraging bus lanes. And, you know, on high frequency corridors. The top example is rerouting the the existing C4, which becomes the M12 route, and it shows connecting that route to the North Bethesda station, which has a lot of activity going on in that area. So that would be a new connection for that line. And then the map on the bottom shows the focus on more routes taking advantage of the dedicated bus lanes on H Street Northeast, putting more service into that high ridership corridor of the network. Moving on to the next slide, the new network is also making the bus more convenient, creating more direct and easier to understand and more frequent service. It would save existing customers 10,000 hours every weekday. Routes are more direct to save time and avoid confusion. More than 140,000 more people have access to service that comes at least every 30 minutes, middays and weekends. And 4% more trips will be made convenient on transit. So, we looked at just trips that people make in the region overall, and by designing the network, tried to make more trips that would be convenient and competitive if people were able to make those on transit. The maps on the right on this slide, one shows the existing W2 route in Southeast District of Columbia, which is a route that that may almost makes a complete loop, but doesn't quite connect to make a full loop, winding around various portions of the Ward 8 area of Southeast DC. And the map on the bottom shows how this network was redesigned in this area to create multiple routes in this area, providing more direct connections with connections with key destinations on both ends of the routes, allowing better access to more destinations and quicker access throughout that area of the district. Moving on to the next slide. So making the network more intuitive and easy to understand. We're proposing new names to the bus route to make it more consistent and legible. The approach to these new route names are, the first character for the routes in the District of Columbia would start with either a D or a C. All routes would use a letter followed by two numbers, because that's what, when we did customer research, we found that those were the easiest for customers to remember, was that alphanumeric system. So in the district, it is, routes would start with either a D or a C. Routes with a D would be routes that are focused on connecting downtown DC to other parts of the district, and routes that start with a C would be focused on the crosstown routes that do not serve the downtown area. In Montgomery County, the routes would start with an M. In Prince George's County, the routes would start with a P. And on the Virginia side, routes focused in Alexandria and Arlington would start with an A, and routes focused in Fairfax County and the cities of Fairfax and Falls Church would start with an F. And then building upon that, the second character would show a number that's sort of consistent with the family of routes in an area of the service area. And then the third character would be the number that distinguishes each route as a unique route. And then if it is an express route, that third digit would be represented with an X to show a limited stop route. The map on the right of this map shows the northwest area of the District of Columbia with a family of C80 routes, C81, C83, C85, and C87. that provide crosstown service on Military Road, Nebraska Avenue, with various branches off of that. And then a family of D70 routes that are the D70, D72, and D74 that are all focused on Connecticut Avenue and the various branches off of those family of routes. So I'm showing how this naming system could work. Moving on to the next slide. This network also, we believe, creates a faster, more reliable travel time by eliminating some bus stops that are too close together. We're proposing to eliminate about 600 or so bus stops out of the 9,500 bus stops that Metrobus uses. These are stops that were too close together based on our current service guidelines. Stops that have low ridership, both boardings and alightings, and stops that were not accessible, that weren't providing safe pedestrian access. And typically, as far as the consolidation, since these stops were already very close together, as far as like how they would have effect on a metro access service zone, we really did not find an effect. The stops that still remain, those area, the zones from both of those, that three-quarter buffer still covers everything that was in the buffer of the stops that were proposed for elimination in almost every case for these proposed eliminations. On to the next slide. We are working within our current funding and staffing resources, to create a more efficient system, carrying more customers and using those same resources. So this proposed 2025 network does maintain the current amount of resources that we have in our current service plan, but it does work on reducing our service duplication, leveraging more connections on Metrorail, and carrying more customers using the same level of resources. There are some shifts in distribution of service hours between and among the jurisdictions, but those are relatively small. We are working on refining the network schedules and blocks to more efficiently provide that service, and allocating the cost by working with our jurisdictions to modernize our subsidy allocation formula. So the graph that's on this slide does show comparing the current and the proposed distribution between the jurisdictions within our compact area, showing these small percentage changes on the level of service when you look at it on a jurisdiction by jurisdiction basis. But the total amount of resources adds up to the same level of service that we have. So then just to finish things out, I have a few slides on the public and stakeholder engagement, and then we'll jump to questions. So as far as as I mentioned, we have 9 weeks of engagement. Our goals for this third phase of engagement is to increase awareness and understanding of the proposed network, to get the input that we need to make those final adjustments to the network before we take this back to the board for approval, and to generate support and build advocacy and create champions for the new network. So this 9 week period is definitely the opportunity to provide feedback on the network and get those comments incorporated into the final plan that we'll take to the board of directors. So the next slide, there are multiple opportunities coming up to provide feedback. We have discovery days, one in each state level jurisdiction. They're starting this week in Virginia and going for the next 3 weeks. There's one of these discovery days each week for the next 3 weeks. These discovery days, there'll be an expo to learn more about the proposed network and provide feedback. There'll also be a separate public hearing room if you want to speak directly to one of our members of the board of directors. Though all the comments we received will go into that public hearing record. So you do not necessarily need to speak in front of one of the board members to have those comments put into the public record. We'll also be having, and we have been having, a number of pop-ups throughout the region, showing up at high ridership stations, high change areas, and equity-focused communities to answer questions and ask and gather comments. And we've also been in the process of doing ride-alongs, which is having a couple survey staff ride along on bus trips, getting customers to fill out surveys and focusing that on high change routes and areas that we're not reaching with other events. On to the next slide. There's also a lot of online opportunities to explore the routes and provide comments. We have the Discovery Hub online, you know, to explore the new bus network. That includes state route maps, you know, system maps for each state level jurisdiction, DC, Virginia, and Maryland. It also has a route profile for each individual route, which is the individual route map and the frequencies that that route runs for each time period and day of the week. We have neighborhood profiles, which is the region divided into about 80 or 90 different neighborhoods and detailing the effect of the changes on each of those neighborhoods, and more tools to learn about the new route names. Additionally, sharing input online, we have an interactive map where you can pin comments and see what other people have pinned comments to that live interactive map to provide feedback about what you think about the network and specific routes and areas of the region. We also have a survey that you can take to provide comments. There's also a location to provide written comments about more specific details about information you want to know, as well as there's an opportunity to upload documents. So various committees and civic groups throughout the region and stuff like that that want to send more formal letter representing a larger group of residents around the region, you know, there's a place to upload those official documents that those groups want to provide to the process. So our next steps, taking all this feedback back and, you know, then making the final revisions before we take it to the board, and then looking to prepare to implement this network next summer in 2025. So, you know, what we're looking for is any help that you all can provide, spreading word to those that aren't here that want to provide comments and providing your feedback as well. There's a toolkit with these resources available online. And then there's the calendar on the last slide here shows just where we're at with the project. That shows, you know, we're currently in this spring of 2024 public engagement process, working towards that fall approval for the board of directors and the summer 2025 implementation. So with that, happy to take questions and feedback, comments that you all have about the network.
Thanks, Al. As I mentioned I would, I did a few minutes ago send out the registration. Am I muted?
No, your voice was going in and out, but now we can hear
you. I'm sorry. I did send out the Coalition of Smart Growths program to members and anyone else on our list for tomorrow. Two things. You mentioned that this fall, the board, that is the WMATA board, will be reviewing what you've done thus far. Is that true? Did I get that
Yes,
right?
that's correct. The plan is to, the board authorized for this recommendation to go out for, public outreach and public hearing, and as part of that process and the typical public hearing process, at the end that will conclude with us coming back with a final recommendation to the board for the board's adoption.
This fall.
Yeah, this fall. Yeah.
Okay, two things. First of all, I appreciate your care to make sure that low-income people and people of color are better served or well served in the new redesign. Separate topic, it looks pretty certain that the circulator bus of DC is going to be dropped. Do you know when, and will MATA attempt to cover some of what the circulator bus used to cover?
So this plan was developed prior to that announcement by the District of Columbia that they were planning to drop the circulator. So as part of the process of gathering comments and getting more feedback from the District of Columbia, we'll be incorporating that into the recommendations that we take to the board. But we're still working through those issues because that came up after the development of these recommendations.
Do you know when circulator will go out of service?
I believe I'm not exactly sure. I'd have to look through, and I don't know that the district, I think it's proposed, there's some proposals in the budget, but I don't believe that they've identified that they've made a specific decision yet. So I think you just have to look through the DC legislative process and see where that's at.
Okay, but you expect that you'll be able to make up for some of the lack of service if and when the DC circulator bus goes out of commission.
I mean, it'll be considerations that we make in the recommendations that, the final recommendations that we bring to the board. But we're not able to provide any specific assurances or promises about what we could provide with the circuit, with to make up for DC's decision on the circulator.
I knew I see a number of hands up. If
This
you could call them out in order.
yes, Chair Kalabia, this is Anu. So we have four people with their hands up: Vanessa Coles, Denise Rush,
Alert.
Steve Kaplan,
Audio now
and then
unmuted.
Doris Ray, and then Pat Sheehan, fifth one. So Vanessa, go ahead.
Okay, hi. My name is Vanessa Coles. I'm African American, middle-aged woman. It was a fast briefing, but tried to retain some of the things I wanted to ask. Not a month or two ago, they were threatening to take out routes. So I'm curious. So that was because of the fiscal year budget. So all of these changes are in the FY25 fiscal year approved for next year. It's one of my questions, concerns. And then the other thing I wanted to ask, and Mr. Blake may be best to answer this one, is these new added bus routes
Alert.
and
Calculated
communities,
farmer.
does that mean that the folks that were not grandfathered in will now be able to take some of these routes, seeing that new bus routes will be added to local communities? Those are the two major questions I guess I wanted to ask or concerns.
Yeah, so in regards to the budget, there was a budget proposal made before the District of Columbia, the State of Maryland, and the Commonwealth of Virginia had made commitments to fund the metro budget. So we had to propose a service plan that reflected on the on the funding that you know we understood to be the case at the time. After that budget was proposed, each of those jurisdictions passed legislation that increased the amount of money that was available. Therefore, you know, basically passed legislation to fully fund Metro's current service level. So as a result, those proposed, you know, the original proposals from that budget were not implemented. So, and this, you know, one of the pieces of that process of the you know, Maryland, the district, and Virginia making those commitments to Metro was a commitment to us on our process, continuing to work on this bus network redesign project. So there was a commitment to looking at how we could use our resources more efficiently. And then as far as Metro Access Service Area,
one more thing, this budget seemed to be year to year. So is this going to be continuous or every year it has to be reviewed?
You know, there's other projects going on. You know, it's you may have seen the DMV Moves project that you know, the region and the Council of Governments has kicked off to help look and see and you know what needs to be done to help a more sustainable funding source for Metro. But you know it. You know, this is the service level we're designing to. I can't answer the questions about what our funding partners are going to commit to or not commit to in the future.
Next. Anu?
Okay, so next would be
Denise. I didn't get the Metro Access side, and I guess that's for Mr. Blake.
I can answer that as well. The simple question to the Metro Access answer is, if we add service in an area that is somewhere we're currently not serving, the Metro Access area would expand accordingly, and anyone who lives within the 3/4 mile radius of the bus stop served by that route would be eligible.
So therefore eliminating the grandfathering kind of thing?
Yeah, there would be, if there's a route there and bus stops there, you know, there is no grandfathering. We provide Metro Access service to anybody that lives within 3/4 of a mile of a bus stop that we serve.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Vanessa and Al. Next is Denise Rush, followed by Steve Caffin.
This is Ms. Rush. I'm a visually impaired committee member, and I can't see your charts. My main question, I didn't hear you talk about Fort Washington in PG. I didn't hear you talk about 210. I didn't hear you talk about Branch Avenue going further down. Are those in your figures and charts to focus on those routes?
Yeah, I mean, we have a large region, so the presentation was simply just examples of what we're doing throughout the region, and there's many more places where we can identify, you know, similar things to what we had in the presentation. You know, Fort Washington, or Fort
210,
yeah.
Fort Washington, Branch Avenue.
So I'd have to, you know, I know that, you know, there's some things in the visionary plan there. There is, I'd have to go back and look at the specific details on that. I'm not aware that there's significant improvements to Fort Washington in this plan. And
We've been literally begging for service for those three areas for years. And I have participated in your pop-up programs and gone, and they, when I've gone, they said, well, yeah, we're it's in the works, but now you're saying you don't think they're in the works.
Well, they are for the visionary plan for the proposed 2025 network, where we're working with the same amount of resources. There were trade-offs, and we couldn't do, we couldn't make the expansions everywhere where we felt, that it was justified. So
Okay. That's a no.
We were not able to make those improvements in the proposed 2025 plan. There are recommended improvements in the visionary plan.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Okay, next would be Steve Caffin and then Doris Ray.
Okay, thank you. Steve Caffin, I'm Caucasian. Black hair that's losing itself as the days go on, and wearing a green shirt tonight. Al, first, this is a very comprehensive presentation. Congratulations, and I think also congratulations that you yourself are aware of so much of the detail that it's important and it's impressive. I just wanted to let you know about that. Here are two questions. I've been involved. I was the DC representative for the AAC, in the project and interviewing and gathering information and what have you. And I looked at the proposals, and people in the DuPont Circle area, when they're looking at the maps, they see DuPont Circle, and they've asked me, because they know I'm involved in WMATA to some extent, whether that's DuPont Circle North or DuPont Circle South. And it's not clear one way or the other. DuPont Circle North by far is the best for our constituents, because the elevator and the stops are so close, and it's also the best location for commuters. But as you're going through the process, could you better clarify that? As you're getting comments, because that was a question that came up actually to me.
Okay, whether particular routes are stopping at the
well,
north side.
It's easy to see the old routes and the new routes. I think we have a D90, a D92, that cover, the 42, 43 and the N routes and what have you. And they stop at DuPont Circle. I'm just saying that before people start to deluge with their comments, you may need a clarification whether it's DuPont Circle North or DuPont Circle South.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
because there hasn't been in what's come out so far, and that's a big deal for the people that we represent, because of the outstanding elevator and the transfer activity in the north part versus the much more complex southern area, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So the way the way the network is proposed, the bus, the network redesign doesn't make accessing DuPont South any easier than it is in the current network. And
right. I know.
Yeah, the service you know, so we can access, the north is easier for us to access with the bus, especially a bus terminating there. So it's pretty much, one for one replacement. So for the most route, the routes, so like the route that's coming, that terminates at DuPont Circle, that's coming from the west, that's still going to use that same layover zone at DuPont North. And the buses coming from Adams Morgan and Mount Pleasant are still going to stop, on Connecticut Avenue near DuPont.
And they're, they're commuter buses. That's where they transfer. Okay. Thank you. I just brought that to your attention because I've been asked which DuPont Circle it is, and so I just want to pass that on. Just a quickie. I noticed that a couple of times recently, I've had early morning Union Station trains, and I was shocked how many people are actually sleeping or waiting for several hours. I had trouble finding seats. and this occurs at, after the red line completes its service at midnight, and let's say before 5:30, and there's really nothing. And I think that in the past there hasn't really been a need, but with the increased Amtrak and bus service and what I'm seeing congregating there, then either the 90 or the 92 bus, which seems to stop somewhere near the convention center, one of those may be designated a bus that runs at, let's say, covering that time, but not to go into Union Station, because I hate to use the term, that's death for a bus, if you know what I mean. But even stop at North Capitol and turn around there, but provide some kind of service to handle what I've seen is a lot of people who seem to have a lot of need in those early morning hours. So thanks very much.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Next would be Doris Reid and then Pat Sheehan. So Doris, go ahead.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. The first quick one is, the first time I saw the notice of the feedback sessions and hearings was today. Is that the first notice you put out? What other notice have you put out to the communities?
No, today was certainly not the first notice. There's been a lot of information out there throughout the system.
Whom did you send the notice?
I
mean, where I have had to have gone up on the website, and know that it was up there and find it, or what?
I mean, just various things I've, but I mean, to answer those specific questions, we'd need somebody from our customer experience team that's more familiar of every place where it's been. But, there's notice posted on the buses. There's an A-frame sign in every rail station advertising this. It's been in the, a number of local media outlets have picked it up. I know that there's a few listservs that I'm on.
So how am I, as a blind person, going to be able to see a notice on the bus?
Our customer experience teams can answer
okay.
this question.
So the reason I'm asking this question is that I am extremely concerned that Virginia residents are only being given less than 2 days to know about and come to a session for Virginia, not just for Arlington, but for Virginia. So that we can express our concerns, particularly about the way the bus network has gone for us and the proposals that are coming forth that are eliminating service between Fairfax County residents at the border of Arlington County who need to get to their government center and to other public facilities and private facilities like Fair Oaks Mall using bus to bus and not being forced to go to as far away as Courthouse Metro and have to come back up the line to get a bus to go to our government center. And or, like last night, I got on a 28 bus going on an errand over to the west end of Alexandria. So I usually come through Southern Towers, but I also take that same trip up Columbia. I also take that same trip utilizing from Pentagon 7A and the 7F. At least that's what I used to do and still have to do. But if I'm on the 7A, 7F, which used to take me directly to the address that I was going to, near Southern Towers, instead I'm forced to get off 7A or 7F and wait for a dash bus. And decisions like that and decisions cutting service to Fairfax County residents, we should have an appropriate opportunity and just as much notice as anyone else. And I thought the communication plan for notice to the community for hearings and public engagement was at least 15 days. And here we've got less than 2 days. And I feel that given the geography and our reliance, Fairfax County, on buses and or Arlington County and Alexandria City residents being able to, you know, cross the border and in a bus-to-bus route without having to change buses or onto the subway and then back onto the bus two or three times. That's, to me, and I was serving on the advisory committee, but I don't think we're being heard. That is not an improvement in service. And I think we should have an opportunity to say that and be able to say it in person if others can say it. And the last thing I'll note to you is although I know the community center where you're going to have the event in Arlington is fairly new and pretty accessible, the route of travel from Dinwiddie Street and Columbia Pike is not at all particularly accessible. In fact, I had a colleague who broke her leg. She was using a wheelchair, and there's a steep slope to get to Arlington Mill. And so I'm wondering what consideration was given to that if you were going to do it in South Arlington rather than doing it at some place like Walter Reed or a similar, more accessible route for the bus. So those are both my comments and my questions, and whether something more is going to be done beyond these 2 weeks, and whether Virginians are going to be given, particularly Fairfax County residents, some better chance to make comment.
Well, the information's been, you know, been publicized since May 13th. I'm sorry that you particularly
was it
missed
sent for
this.
Publication to the Centers for Independent Living to send out? I've not seen it. I read all of the newsletters. So.
Yeah, I mean we've pushed out a lot of information. I've seen a number of our jurisdictional partners pick up that information. I personally on a number of, you know, listservs for.
I don't think I saw it in Arlington, the inside Arlington.
Okay, because I'm on some Arlington listservs and I've seen it. They've run it continuously on their South Arlington transportation newsletter that comes out. I've seen them advertising it there, and then they have a couple other ones that they send out. So I know that.
What about the rest of us in North Arlington or in?
Well, it's also, you know. I'm just using that as an example of the one they put it on all of their ones that they push out like that. It wasn't just a, you know, but
okay.
You know,
but in Fairfax County, the Board of Supervisors, I've not seen the board.
Doris, I received it and I'm down in Florida. It came to me via email through the Transportation Committee in Arlington. And it was also posted in Better Washington. So I've received it in a couple of notices, both for Fairfax at the center and in Arlington. So they are out there. You just have to be lucky enough to open the message.
Phil, you are seeing things that come through Fairfax County sources, like the newsletters coming out from Braddock District, the newsletters coming out from Hunter Mill District. I haven't seen any of that, and I'm on their newsletter cycles, and I haven't seen it coming out in Access Fairfax. So maybe you're looking at other things, but I certainly know the county I live in and receive their information sources.
Yes, Doris, that's what I'm saying. I got mine through Arlington County and also through Better Washington.
I mean, we have.
Well, again, maybe I wasn't looking at a source, and I'm not talking about Arlington. I'm talking about Fairfax County residents.
We have.
And we are part of the Metro Bus Network.
We have pushed out the information and have promoted having many people.
I've made my point, and I don't, you know, I am a Fairfax County resident, and I also monitor supervisors' newsletters. So.
Okay, I would also ask your supervisor why they're not pushing out that.
So how long has it been out?
It's been out for a month since May 13th.
Been out since
May 13th.
May 13th.
Okay, Doris, there are two more hands that were already.
No, I'm at an end. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Anu, who's next?
Would be Pat Sheehan. Pat, go ahead.
Thank you, Anu. You know, because there's been all of this back and forth, maybe if you could find out who you sent that communication out to in Virginia, that would be helpful. And then we'd know. So as you stated before, you had the comms people. They would know who they sent it out to. That's all we need to know. So I think that would be useful.
Yeah, I don't have that full detailed list.
Right, but you handy, can, yes, I know you that... have the... You know the people that have that information.
Yep. I know we have a thorough process to do it. And
right. Definitely. So if we could find out who that was sent to in Virginia, that would be great. That would be helpful. My other point, I was at the DMV Moves meeting this afternoon. One of the areas that they brought up was equity service as far as busing is concerned. Going back to one of the things that Denise was talking about, the ROBS in Prince George's County. It seems to me that the DMV Moves, part of one of their planks is to ensure that they provide service to folks that are where that service is needed. I would imagine the time frame that you're talking about, from now until July of next year, is the same time frame that the DMV Moves task force is going to be putting together their recommendations. I would imagine that your recommendations are being going to be fed into that process, so that regionally, the Washington area will take a look at, you know, not just WMATA transit, but transit really throughout the region, the other 9 or 12 or whatever it is, bus routes that are out there that can possibly provide service in an area like Prince George's County. As Denise stated, we've been trying to push for bus service in that area for the last 15 years. And so I think that's an area of focus that probably is going to get pushed and relooked at again, because that's something that DMV Moves, with their fairly significant task force, was talking about today. Yeah. So it seems that things are, from where you're cutting these routes and they're pushing those routes, you seem to have a little bit of a disconnect there.
Well, just to clarify, the Fort Washington service, it wasn't proposed to be cut. It was that we couldn't incorporate the improvements in the resource neutral budget. The plan to get to the visionary network, it is scalable. So any additional resources that come our way as part of DMV Moves, you know, we have the capability to then.
So is that high on the priority list?
As far as like what's more important in the visionary network versus something else, we haven't done a specific priority.
On the visionary network, is the Prince George's County routes, the ones that Fort Washington, 210 and Branch Avenue, are they high on that priority list?
That's what I'm saying, that we haven't prioritized within the visionary network which routes should be done first over another.
Okay.
And a lot of times our funding improvements doesn't come to us in a full regional form where we can make decisions on that. A lot of times it's jurisdiction specific. So the jurisdiction that's providing additional funding, that's where the service gets invested. So that's why sometimes, you know, when people wonder why Arlington's getting something more, it's because they're investing in it.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, sir?
There's jurisdiction, you know, like Arlington County has come, you know, over the years with a number of, you know, of dollars attached to specific requests to make improvements in the county. So that's why, you know, those improvements have come over the years.
Oh, so they're county based. Interestingly enough, it looks like, you know, with the DMV Moves, that one of their pillars that they're looking at is, you know, what do we want to do? Equity funding for particularly bus routes with one. How are we going to pay for it? Who's going to govern it? So I think the how we're going to pay for it as a region is going to be coming up. I would just like to see that, regardless of if the pot of money is there. Not if that pot of money is supplied by Prince George's County, but because you're looking at a regional system now, not the current jurisdictional system, then it would seem to me to be beneficial to be able to prioritize the routes and saying, if money becomes available in the region, then these are the routes that we want to do. Here are our top 10 routes we want to
find. And that. You know, there will be a point in this process where, you know, we will create a, you know, priority for that. But, you know, it.
Well, we're pushing for Prince George's County.
The challenge at the moment was to make a recommendation for what we would do with the existing resources. So,
right.
Well, that's what we're presenting now.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Pat.
Who's last?
Chair Sheehan, we do not have any additional AAC members. Janice Samuel, Janice, we can take your...
Okay.
Thank you.
Chair Sheehan, Calabia, did you want to take Janice's comments during public comments, or did you want to...
Do that because we're already 15 minutes into the final agenda.
Okay. Janice, if you would just be patient and we will take your comments when we begin the public comment section at 5:45. Thank you. Okay, so next topic is the committee discussion about the site visit today at Lafont Plaza Station to review the digital signage. And the members who were present there today were Tino Calabia, Sandy Newsell, and Rico Dancy.
Yes. And I must say that there were a host of staff, as well as Sarah Myers herself. And we went from areas of signage to other areas of signage, to pillars, to wall signs, to kiosks, and that sort of thing. I was very impressed with what they're doing. It seems that they're taking our comments under consideration. The next do-over, actually the second do-over, will be in Roslyn sometime in August, and perhaps we'll see the results of some of the suggestions we made when it comes to what signage is done in Roslyn. The only thing that I missed out saying was that the whiteboards, for which we had discussions going back years, we didn't mention that, and somehow there has to be designed a kind of logo or sign allowing riders to know that they can use the whiteboards to ask questions or to have their suggestions made known. Let's see. Sandy had, just prior to our meeting, put together a list of items that we should look for. So, Sandy, do you want to make a comment now? Is Hi. Sandy?
Yes. Hi. I'm Sandy Newsell, a senior Caucasian, gray hair, wearing glasses, and I'm proud to announce that my yellow polo shirt is right side out now. It was inside out at the meeting today, but nobody commented or noticed. So I'd like to, if I could take about 15 minutes, and it might be longer, to just sort of summarize what was said and the reason, you know, reasoning, and then take questions, if that's okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I want to start with a couple of things that Sarah Myers has already put into effect from comments that we have made in previous meetings with her on the digital signs that stand on the platforms. It's a completely new kind of sign. They've just been introduced within the last, I don't know, less than a year. The white background with black letters, we had commented that white background produced so much brightness, creating glare, that perhaps a softer gray background would still maintain enough contrast with the black lettering and be easier to see with low vision. And, you know, if your eyes are sensitive to bright light or other issues with low vision, and that's already been put into effect. I commend Sarah and her team for fixing that already. Another new thing that I hadn't seen, although I believe Sarah probably described it in an earlier meeting, was on those same digital signs that stand on the platforms when there's an upper level and a lower level. When you're on the lower level, and I saw this at Metro Center today, and I saw it at L'Enfant Plaza, when a train arrives, the digital signs facing that train have a pop-up in the sort of lower quarter of the sign that say, basically, upper level 4, and then they give the color, the lines that are on the upper level. So at L'Enfant Plaza, it's, you know, go to upper level 4, green and yellow line. And I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it said, you know, where those were 2. It just had an up facing arrow, a directly facing up arrow. We asked Sarah if it was possible to put a angle arrow to steer you towards the correct elevator or stair escalators or stairs, because in Metro Center and in L'Enfant Plaza, it matters which way you go up to get the line going in the direction you want. And she said, the software is not possible to do that yet, but they're working on it. That should come within a couple of years or less. So that was very encouraging to hear, that as soon as you step off of a train, you have the option, if you're low vision, to walk right up, you know, put your nose on the sign, or as Barbara Millville says, kiss the sign and read what you need. So I could just go through a lot of topics that changes that have already been made, new signage that's out there, and Sarah and her team were asking for feedback. We gave them feedback, and believe me, they were listening and taking notes, and they even asked us questions about a few signs they've put together that, you know, why they did it and is the readability good. So I'll try to, you know, go through this. First, we discussed exits at L'Enfant Plaza. They have an A, a B, a C exit. Oddly enough, Tino and I discovered that where we got off on the green and yellow line on the upper platform, we could find signage to get us to the A and the C exit, but not B. And on the other side, on the green and yellow line, there's signage for exits to A and B, but not C. So that apparently hadn't computed with them, and they took note, and I believe they will solve that, because on any platform, you need to know, how do you go to all each and every one of the exits? They are adamant that they're going to keep the concept of the cardinal direction above, you know, north and south and whatever, but below that they'll put the train line and where it's going to, because us old-fashioned people think of the trains in terms of what's the final destination, what's the end terminal, where's the end station. They explain that in sort of visual attention, larger letters at the top and then somewhat smaller letters to draw your attention to the larger letters at the top. And this was also true for exits, exit A, when you were exit A, B, or C, with the, you know, what is at that location, like exit B has the Metro offices and something else. And we encouraged them to make the font size of that secondary thing larger. Yes, if they insist, it has to be a little bit smaller than the primary thing at the top. And I get it that Metro's coming up with their design concept, but to make that next line of information as large as possible, almost as big as the one above, because that's what a tourist wants. A tourist wants to know, is this exit going to the Smithsonian or to the Air and Space Museum, or is it going to the Metro offices? They don't really care about the name of the exit, exit A or B or C. And for the folks, you know, for the cardinal directions, north and south, and what's the train line and what's the final destination, I think most people care more about the final destination than north and south. So we did our best to convey that that should be prominently, that additional information should be prominently displayed. Then we looked at the signs above the escalators. So as you're on, this is relevant to stations that have two levels of platforms. As you're going down the escalators, yes, there's information on the pylons, and it's brief information. It's what color is there, what color line, and that's good. That's okay. It's brief. It gets you going in the right direction. But as you go down the escalator, you need to know which side of the platform you need to head to. And we pointed out at Longfall Plaza, there's no lighting on the side of the sign, the example we looked at, as you go down the escalator. It's so dim, and I'm only one example, I could not even see there was any writing on that overhead sign until I was like the bottom couple steps of the escalator. And Sarah agreed that that lighting is not good. They haven't figured out how to solve it. One suggestion was to use backlit signs, which are obviously more expensive. They have done that with the PIDs, the platform information display. I think that's what PIDs stand for, on either end of that overhead sign as you're coming down the escalator. The PIDs are like right extended on the ends of that sign, and they are backlit signs, which are very obvious and readable more easily. Then when you go, if you're on the bottom, the lower platform, and you're looking at your escalator signs, the overhead signs to tell you which escalator to go up, is it going to the side of the green line that's going to Branch Ave or the other one? You need to know directional information. The lettering on those signs is good. The light on coming down from the ceiling right in front of those signs does provide plenty of glare in your eyes. I had to like put my hand up to shield that bright light in my eyes. And there is reflection off of the shiny, glossy surface of the sign. But Sarah did ask, but is the information on the sign good? And I do believe that they have come up with a simplified, concise message on that signage so that a normally sighted person who can see past the glare and the reflection could figure it out pretty quickly. I don't know what the solution is on the lighting, and I'm not sure that Metro knows the solution on the lighting for those overhead signs. But those overhead signs for a low vision person like myself aren't my go-to for information because I have to get close. I'm blocking traffic, trying to get onto or off of the escalators. I'm looking up. They do have the original overhead signs that are parallel to the platform edge and hanging from the ceiling. Those also have terrible non-existent lighting on them. I jokingly said, can't you get some of those LED lights like under counter lights in your kitchen for kitchen under kitchen cabinets to light up things? And there was some chuckling, but I'm not sure that that was taken seriously. But
Sandy, it's Barbara. I believe that the backlit lighting, an example of that, would be at Gallery Place, Chinatown.
Okay. And I will say that everybody should go to these stations and look for themselves. I'm not the end all to be all to explain it. Then after we got down the escalators, you exit the escalator and right in front of you practically is a big round pillar. And right on that pillar, on either side of the platform, so that you can tell, should I go this way, should I go that way, if you couldn't read the overhead signs above the escalators. They have really good signage. I don't know what to describe it as, snail trails or something. So it starts at the top with all of the lines that are on that. And in L'Enfant Plaza, it's orange, blue, and silver. And then those lines, the color lines divide and the stations are written beside each of these rail trails. And Yes, they do run out of space, so they do have to put sort of like an abbreviation, an arrow, you know, arrow indicating a few skipped stations, and then they put the final destination. So those signs, which extend from, oh, I don't know, 6 feet down to like 3 feet, they're very readable. Again, they're a situation where I can go up and kiss them practically, and I can read the information if I get close enough. Then we went and looked at the digital signs that stand on the platforms. One side of the digital sign, as you look at it, your back is to the edge of the platform. The information that you're looking at is for the side of the platform you're on, for the trains that will be coming behind you. So you can look at the sign, turn around, hop on the train. They're two-sided signs so that it's got information for both sides of the platform. Those are the ones they start with. At the very top, they have service interruption information can be up there. I didn't realize that. I do think Sarah had described that in an earlier meeting. It was scrolling information because there is service interruption for the Red Line for the next couple months. So that information was scrolling across the top. I find scrolling information hard to read. Barbara suggested slowing down the scroll. I suggested that had a bright white background, so I couldn't really read it, to tone down that bright white background maybe. Metro asked us, and I apologize that I can't remember the gentleman's name who's in charge of signage. He said, would it help if it was a static message that was two or three lines long, because they have enough room, they could sort of shift all the information on those digital platforms signs down a bit. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. But it's something I think everybody should think about and weigh in on, because they are looking for input.
They are.
And then below that, they had, you know, what's the next train coming? And then the next piece of information was the previous station where that was coming from. Then in with bright white background, again, I suggested not that bright white background. They had the current station. And then below that, they had the stations you would be going to, again, with the little arrows indicating we can't fit all the station names there. And then the final destination. So this is all good. Over to the right, they have information about, is there parking at that station? What other color lines go through that station if there's more than one line? So there's a lot of information packed in there. And again, I described it earlier, at the very bottom of the sign, when a train came in, for I don't know exactly how long, I'm guessing about 30 seconds, there was a pop-up of about two lines of information saying, go to the upper level to get the green and yellow trains, with the arrow just indicating up. They can't yet indicate this escalator and stairs, that escalator and stairs. But it's progress. It's really, it's good progress. Gosh, there was so much I talked about. I'm only through page one out of four pages. I better speed this up. Oh, Steve, you'll be glad to know I've gotten permission to put more maps, static metro maps, in more places on the station, right by the entrance exit kiosks, just inside of the kiosk. So you can come through the kiosk, look at a map, remind yourself where you need to go, which lines to get to your final station. On the platforms, they've gotten permission to put up static maps in more places. For instance, on the doors and hardware under the stairs, for instance. So that's
controller cabinets.
Okay, controller cabinets. Thank you, Barbara.
Right. Sandy, that's very good news, because if you remember,
mm-hmm. you've you, been asking about
you,
it.
No, well, I think you first raised it, and we both did some research on a good number of stations, and so this is very good news.
Yes. Okay.
I've been riding the system for years, and I still find myself looking for a map to make sure I want Metro Center or Chinatown for the transfer. And so doubtless there are many people who want those maps available, and not right. just tourists.
Great. Okay, so they all they also ask, I'm probably leaving out a few things, but they did ask us about there were some signs on the wall. They're trying to sort of come up with a format to distinguish information outside of the metro station, like for, you know, once you exit, where to exit and what you'll find outside of the metro station, and format for information within the station. And they had wall signs, horizontal wall signs, where the upper part was background color was one thing, and then the lower part background was another color. And in Metro's mind, this is sort of to distinguish the outside of the metro station versus inside the metro station. One would have eventually learned this, I guess, by exposure, but we critiqued the background color on one of those, made it, it's just sort of really weird. It didn't quite offset the white coloring of the lettering as well. So we suggested they work on that background color a bit. Then they showed us another wall sign where the station name and stuff is above, and then below they have the colors of the lines, that like yellow and green line, horizontal. And then instead of having, you know how they have all the sign, all the station heads diagonally on the old wall signs? Well, they're considering having that horizontal above or below the horizontal snail trail of the rail trail going across the sign. But they don't have every station name. They have, it looked to me like it wasn't exactly random, but it wasn't like they gave you the next six stations and then said, okay, we're going to skip the rest until here's the end of the line. They gave you, I don't know whether they're high entrance exit stations that have connecting with other rails lines. I wasn't quite sure how they chose those station names to put on the sign, but it's a new concept that they're trying out. They need feedback. Then the final thing they asked us, which had to do with platform numbers. Would it be a good idea to just go with platform numbers so that if I know ahead of time, I have to figure out, okay, I'm getting on at L'Enfant Plaza, I have to read the green line over to Gallery Place, and then I need to change to the red line. I need to, as I walk into the station, I'm supposed to figure out, wasn't quite sure where I would figure this out, that I need platform one to get the green line headed towards Gallery Place, Chinatown. And then I could just follow a series of signs saying platform one this way, platform one this way, platform one this way, up the escalators, across the tracks, down the escalators, now you're on the right platform. And it's a concept that they claim is used in international big cities. They named a few. I can't remember which ones, Singapore, somewhere.
Tokyo,
okay. But they need feedback on that. They aren't wedded to this idea, but I can tell that they are leaning towards this idea. And I said, it's just one more piece of information I have to figure out, like the color of the line I need, the direction I need, and then translate that into a platform number. Their position sounded like, yes, but once you figure that out, the signage is a lot easier to follow. So I don't know, but I do think everybody should consider this, and we should give them feedback as a group. Okay, I think that's a lot of, that's not everything, but you know, we did spend a very intense hour looking at a lot of stuff. Sarah was, and her team were very informative and very receptive to comments, I will say.
That's for sure. Yes. we have some hands up. Anu, do you know?
Yes, this is Anu. So we have Denise Rush followed by Philippa Mazel. So Ms. Rush, go ahead.
This is Ms. Rush. Barbara Melville, I have a question. Some of the signs just have AV instead of AVE, and new in town or new on the system, are they planned to change it to AVE with the proper spelling of the information?
We did not bring that up, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. And also,
the same thing is with, they have 9th Street, and I believe it should say 9th with T.
Street. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, can we find out what the plan is on that question? And the other question is, have they started letting you know available restrooms?
So, Denise, this is Sandy again. We were so overwhelmed by so much information. I apologize. We did not ask about AV versus AVE.
And 9th Street.
Right.
It's not 9th Street. Right. It's 9th. Yeah. So,
and
okay.
We forgot to ask about restroom signage, and we forgot to ask them, how do they calculate color contrast? We did forget.
Okay. Well, can we refocus on those issues?
Yes.
At a later date?
Yes.
Roslyn Station is next, and they'll be working with us on how to adapt or adopt some of the things we talked about at L'Enfant Plaza. They'll adopt or adapt some of them for Roslyn, and we'll get a chance to look at Roslyn when it's at the same stage of development as L'Enfant Plaza is now. So I think they're very receptive, that's for sure. They're really receptive. They are flexible. I think we're in good hands. The next one's Anu.
Next will be Philippa Mazel and then Pat Sheehan.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm sorry I wasn't able to make it today. As I told Anu, I had an appointment. I didn't get out until 3 o'clock, but sounds like you were very thorough, Sandy, but I do plan to go over there and look.
Good.
So are we planning another location visit or just that one?
That was the only one. I would go with you, except I'm going to be out of town for the next 2 weeks. So, but maybe late July, could you go with me?
Sure. Well, yeah, late July, I'll be back by then. Yes.
Okay. And I think it would probably behoove me to write up some of these things that we, things that people should comment about and things we forgot to ask about, so that you have a good focus. Okay.
Actually, I should add that as her homework prep for this visit, Sandy put together a nice list of things that we should look into. And it also included some suggestions that we should make sure get adopted. In any event, Rosalind is ahead of us. It's going to take them at least a month or more to do Rosalind. So we have another shot at this. But if you can go, go before Rosalind.
Yeah, I will go, and I'll also go with Sandy. Now, because I did have some concerns, like the sign that just said North, and I'm glad to see that they did put the destination up there as well. But I'll go take a look, and then I'll do another visit with Sandy. But I'll get my comments in probably this week, and then go with Sandy again, and we'll do another visit.
And okay. You'll be glad to know, Philippa, this is Sandy again, that on the red line where it was North, no matter where you got on or which way you were going, they now have Northeast and Northwest.
Oh, God. Okay.
Who's okay. next?
Thank Hello. You.
Okay, thank you, Philippa. Next is Pat Sheehan. Pat, go ahead.
Thank you. Real quick, I don't think Northeast Northwest is going to help me at all.
No, nope.
One of those old-fashioned people. Just give me my destination. Sandy, great job. That's wonderful, the work you put into this. Can you talk to me for a minute about kiosks? What do they say about kiosks? What did you look at?
Sandy? I'm having a brain freeze. When you say kiosk, do you mean like the station manager's booth?
Yeah.
No, I was actually looking at more of the kiosks where you would be doing transactions, let's say.
Oh, paying money.
Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, that's what I consider kiosks rather than okay. station managers. But yeah,
we did not discuss those at all.
Well, no. Then that was easy. See? No, when you mentioned chaos in the beginning, you were talking about the station
managers.
Yes. Booth. Got it. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Good. We got it. No, that's good. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Pat. Chair Calabia, this is Anu. That is all for the AAC members. It is 5:46 p.m., so we should be beginning our public comment section.
Right.
Okay. So, Janice, I know you had raised your hand. Go ahead, please. When you start speaking, I will turn on the timer at that.
Thank you. Now that Sandy's spoken, I want to comment also to a lot of things that she said. I agree for a legally blind, low vision individual, scrolling does not work. By the time I focus on the wording, it's off the screen. That the diagonal indication of the stations, I understand them wanting to make them horizontal, but then when you make them horizontal, you can't fit everything on one line because there's not enough space. So, and I know everything's about money. If they could stay diagonal and just be larger, that would be great. Static is better than pop-up. Platform numbers, I think that's a bad idea. Like Sandy said, it's just remembering another piece of information. And directional signage, north, south, east, west. I know my directions, but I think that's totally unhelpful. So, and again, it's just another piece of information. I don't think it's helpful. I don't know if the gentleman is still on the line who is giving the presentation on the bus service areas. So what I heard him say is, bottom line, Prince George's County needs to invest more in the system. So I wanted to confirm that that's indeed what he's saying. And his response to Ms. Coles about the Prince George's County bus routes, I found his answer to be very confusing. So I don't know if anyone else thought that as well. So those were my comments.
This is Anu. Janice, what we'll do is we will take your questions to Mr. Hines, Al Hines, and get clarification and then share those with you.
Yeah,
thank you.
I'm stuck.
Oh, Al is here, actually. Okay, oh. Thank you, Al. Yeah. Go ahead, please.
So I think, you know, so agree, you know, there's discussion. I mean, the whole DMV moves, I think there's a recognition from the region that, you know, there needs to be a better regional solution and make these decisions. I was just simply using the example of where particular jurisdictions have funded it, but, you know, we're not saying, you know, we agree that that's not the best way to run a transit system, you know, and we need to be able to make better decisions. The Prince George's County, you know, there are a number of areas in Prince George's County that do see improved benefits from this network. It's just that the particular areas of Fort Washington where the questions came up, we were not able to make additional improvements there in the year one, you know, in the June 2025 proposal. There are proposed improvements throughout the region, including Fort Washington, in the visionary proposal should more funding become available.
If I can quickly interrupt you, were any service area improvements made to the Bowie Mitchellville area?
Most of the, I would, to simplify things, most of the improvements, most of the significant improvements are inside the Beltway.
Mm-hmm. Is that all, Janice?
Yes, thank you, Anna.
Thank you. All right, so Rico Dancy wanted to make some public comments. Rico, go ahead. And then we will have Doris Ray.
Okay, thank you so much, Anu. We need to educate ISD station managers how they are talking to people rude with a disability. I'm gonna give you two examples on Gary Place and the Front Plaza. Asked where how to get to one place, and the man was on his personal cell phone, and he was so rude. He said, "Do you have a phone? You check yourself." So that's how rude they are. Our station manager, we need to educate them how they talking to people, to customers. Thank you.
Thank you, Rico. And I just want to state for the record that Rico did call me about his complaints with the station managers, and those complaints have been forwarded to the rail transportation departments for further review. I did explain the process of investigation with Rico, and Rico, the training part will be also included in that, as I think we had mentioned. So thank you for reporting those. And I do hope that your future experiences should be more positive. That is my hope, at least. And thank you for reporting. Okay, Doris, you're up next, so go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to ditto the comments made about the signs and the metro stations. I was not able to come today. So I'd surely like to hear about when another visit might be made, look at them. But the most important thing, I think, is that for people who are legally blind, although it's not entirely universal, the easiest thing to see is a dark, preferably a black background with amber letters, or blue letters or white letters, and not necessarily red. And with at least for the most essential information, you know, which train is coming, how long is it going to be, what's its destination. But other signs in stations these days seem to be using a positive image, and the signs that are all up at the mezzanine level are pretty much a distance, you know, you can't really get close enough to it to read it, whereas the PEDs that are down on the platforms at least are reasonable for some of us. But I do think it's a discussion. I want to absolutely ditto, no scrolling, please. I mean, even the big bus signs that used to, now I reverted to bus, but there are big bus signs at the Roslyn Metro station, and they were nice, and you could read them, but they were scrolling, and they went by so fast that it was hard to see without standing there going through several renditions of looking at the signs. when your next bus was going to come. And I'm not talking about inside lines, inside the actual shelters. I'm talking about the signs that are out there on the street with next bus information. And similarly, the distance at Pentagon from which you know, how high signs are announcing, you know, next bus is contingent. It's a factor in whether you can see the sign or not, and particularly because there's no verbal, no audible way for us to hear the signs. I mean, it's a great feature, but okay. So I look forward to more on that.
Thank you, Denise.
Thanks.
All right, Amanda Hillman, you are up next. So when you go ahead.
Thank you. I'm African American woman. I guess senior citizen. What I am, I guess I mentioned in the main meeting last week about the buses, if the buses rerouted or something, and you all have the automated signs with the audible information given as to when the next bus is coming. For example, if the bus is coming within the next 20 minutes, or the next bus will be here in 10 minutes or whatever. If the bus is rerouted or is not going to come, how would someone know that? Particularly in my case, as someone who has low vision, and I was not able to notice any signs or anything saying that the bus was rerouted. But I assume it was, because when it got to about the bus will be here in 1 minute, maybe a minute or two after that, the next thing I knew, the sign was audibly saying, well, the next bus will arrive in 30 minutes. And of course, the bus had never come, and I never saw any indication of the bus. So I was just wondering what is in place to make people aware if the bus is rerouted, and where the person needs to go to meet the bus in that case. So that's all. And Ms. Anu, I do still owe you the particulars of the situation when that occurred to me. Mm-hmm. I haven't forgotten. I just haven't gotten it to you, but I just wanted to just generally find out what the protocol is, what the procedure is. Thank you.
Okay. Amanda, when you are you able to just send me an email?
Yes.
At access@wmata.com. And I will, the reason I'm saying that is because we are short of time at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to take a moment and give you all the information, and we'll share that with all of the AAC members as well via email.
Okay. Not a problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Calabia?
Yes. I have
Yes. I just want to state that if any members of the public would like to make their comments before or after the meetings, they can send us an email at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And in the minutes, I hope you'll mention how we appreciated the invitation and the staying with us by Sarah Myers and her staff. And we will follow up and look forward to seeing how some of the things that were discussed might be adapted in Roslyn. It is now 6 o'clock. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Oh, here you go, I'll make the motion.
Okay.
Second.
To adjourn. Hearing no objection to adjourn, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, Anu. Thank you all.
Yay. Thank you.
See you next week.